Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary
with Dr. Lara Greaves this morning. Morena, how are you, Lara?
Morena, I'm keeping well. How are you?
Good. Level three, eh? It's a bugger to be back here, but we're all just getting on with it, which is kind of what we're talking about today. Well, one of the things we're talking about today. I wanted to start by asking you your thoughts on the criticism that we've seen of the government's messaging around this latest outbreak. We've seen quite a few different parties suggesting that it's been too complicated, there's been too many different categories, and it's perhaps not been streamlined enough for a community that's got very diverse cultural backgrounds and languages as well, that is at the heart of this being South Auckland. What are your thoughts around this criticism? Do you think it's a valid one?
Yeah, I think we've got two areas for criticism here, right? We've got that broader level of government communications, which were always going to eventually become a bit stale, and we can kind of see the evidence of that. And I think it was something like the 9,000 cars that left Auckland between a certain time period. So we've got that broader kind of messaging, that sort of issues there that we kind of thought we would have long term in terms of people's complacency and people just not really being that afraid of COVID anymore, like on a higher level there. Then we've got the second level of issues, which is like that the people who are categorized as what, casual plus, casual contact, whatever, and there are a lot of issues around that measuring, so I actually had a close family member who was in a supermarket at the same time as one of the positive COVID cases up in Orewa, and he experienced, as a, you know, Pākehā-identified middle-aged man, he like worked at a school, like that kind of vibe, he experienced a lot of the issues with messaging that, you know, is pretty much tailored and designed for people like him, right?
Yeah.
So he had no idea what he was doing, couldn't find, you know, had to go find a testing station, went and got tested, did all the steps, did all the things, and the comms to him still were not clear. So I see that there's a lot of complications having to sort of tailor these messages around different South Auckland communities. I wonder to what extent that the government could do a better job working with people from different communities and different backgrounds to tailor messages, working with community organisations who are already doing great work, and great work especially in Māori communities. Like, is there some way to like fund or empower them to be able to help with this? Because like at this point, that's kind of one of our sort of weak points going forward. Mm. I think, and we're going to have this. This is like our new reality, right? That this is going to be like a huge issue for the government going forward.
Mm, absolutely, and especially because I think prior to moving into the second part of this lockdown, we were seeing the government trying to do their sort of, it's not their new strategy, but I guess it's an extension of what they'd been saying about lockdowns being one tool, and then also trying to wrap rings around outbreaks as they appear, so that we don't necessarily have to go into lockdowns. If that is a strategy that the government's going to pursue, then the messaging really needs to be tight as. We're also going to see, I guess, a lot of scrutiny come out for the way that the vaccine rollout happens. That's also a very big topic at the moment. Great that the vaccine is here, that we're seeing our first line of defence being vaccinated at the moment. But we're also seeing some criticisms of this, unsurprisingly, particularly around perhaps the blanket way in which it's being rolled out. Maybe that could be tailored more specifically. What are your thoughts around this? Do you have any strong feelings about how this particular strategy is being managed? And also for groups like Māori, how are they being supported through this?
We've got also got a number of sort of quite complex issues here, right? Because the government had sort of record levels of support, Labor did, across New Zealand, across people that wouldn't regularly vote for Labor. Mm. So if Labor are going to do a targeted vaccination strategy, if they are going to look to give the vaccine first to people in South Auckland or Māori Pacific communities, they're going to also have that sort of to deal with that in their voters, and voters that may feel like they're entitled to that vaccination first, right? So that's going to be sort of, this is that huge kind of underlying issue for Labor in this. I think that generally all of the evidence so far points to the fact that Māori and Pacifica are more vulnerable and more at risk for sort of complications from COVID, and more likely, you know, I think that's where the vaccine needs to be targeted. We've seen specifically in South Auckland that there's been more outbreaks and more people that are at risk, and I think that potentially a lot of people in the community are coming forward and saying that that's where the vaccine should go first. But I think then you do have to balance the entitlement from certain parts of the population then. But you also, I think, the other sort of argument in favour of vaccinating Māori and Pacific first is that, like, different research has shown that Māori are more likely to be vaccine hesitant, and that has been a concern that sort of experts have communicated. And I think that the earlier you get on and vaccinate more, like people, Māori and Pacific in the community, people can say, hey, look, I know someone who's had the vaccine and they've been fine. I think once a lot of some of that vaccine is an in population, if you can have sort of role models in the community and people that have had that vaccine, then they're fine, and that's kind of something that's going to be positive and going forward. So I think there's a lot of issues there, though, for the government to try to do that in a way that doesn't make critics turn around and kind of use that Māori privilege kind of rhetoric that we've seen over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a wee bit about the university. You work at the University of Auckland. It's the first week back of semester and students are online. Teaching is online. And, I mean, that's not ideal in anybody's books. What's been your experience of this? Do you think that it's the messaging has got more streamlined? Do you think that the processes have got more streamlined? How are people experiencing this new lockdown?
Firstly, I think we're all really gutted that we're not teaching in person. I don't think anyone's like, woo, we can teach online. I did have one student last semester who was like, actually, I'm quite happy to be online.
Yeah.
And pretty much everyone else wanted to be in person. And I think we all do want to be in person. From the staff side of things, the university has said to us and been quite clear about a month ago, sending out a plan saying, like, at level two, we're going to be, unless you get some kind of special exemption, level two or higher, we're going to be online. And they have told us to prepare for that. That still doesn't mean we were prepared. And I really feel for colleagues who have some of those big courses with first years that they have to take online at quite a moment's notice. I think that the university definitely does need to put something in place around making sure that our teaching assistants are fairly compensated for that extra time, because the reality of that is it just takes extra time, and it just takes extra time for those first year courses. Some of our sort of returning second and third year students kind of know the routine at this point and have got that down. So, I mean, I think that that's been really difficult for everyone involved, ultimately, and I really hope that people kind of do have a decent learning experience. And I particularly do feel for my students at the moment who are in postgrad, and that is meant to be this time where you have these wonderful in-class discussions about big ideas, big topics. For a lot of us who end up then going into research, going on for a master's, PhD and more, that is when we kind of get bitten by the bug of, like, academic work and research, and people won't, I'm worried about some of the flow-on effects for that. I think that, yeah, the issue is that we always have to be prepared now to be to go into a lockdown in a short amount of notice. And I don't also think that the university, I think they could be doing more to make sure that everyone does have devices and does have internet access. So if we did suddenly flip to have to go to online teaching as we have, that everyone is ready and we don't have that equity issue there. So I think a bit more could have been done around that.
One of the groups that I see has been very active in sort of helping with some of that equity, as you said, equity issues that are going on, is Ngā Tauira Māori, which is the Māori Students Association at the University of Auckland. Marnie Dunlop over at RNZ's done a great write-up about what they've been doing to support the Māori student population through this new lockdown. They're also expressing frustrations with some of the messaging as well, not just from the government, but also a wee bit from the university. How are you seeing, I guess, in your classes or across the student body, those, I guess, equity issues coming up at the moment?
I think where those are coming up is, I had taught a paper and I last semester and definitely saw differences in equity across students. I think that there are things that for a lot of students they're not thinking, you know, I think the bulk of the student population isn't thinking about internet speeds, for example. Like if we as lecturers go and record something on Zoom, that file can take, like, I remember being slightly rural internet for one of the lockdowns, and it just wouldn't upload.
Yeah.
And I think both students are probably there's a degree, like there'll be a percentage of students that are sitting there going, why would I go to university if the experience is going to be on Zoom? If I'm going to have all of these access issues, why would I even go to university? And that's something that we're going to have to look at long term, of what those effects were on just things like Māori and Pacific student retention, or your retention from people from lower decile schools and that sort of thing. I think that there'll be impacts there long term that we can't quite know yet. I think we've heard a lot of anecdotes of students struggling, and that clear communication, even to lecturers, even to staff, going, okay, what do you do if a student has these access issues, and how the university can support?
Last thing I wanted to chat to you about this morning is a non-COVID related issue. It's Ngāti Maru, who have just had a settlement, a $30 million settlement with the Crown. And this one's quite significant in terms of settlements. It's been a process that's been going on for several years now. But I'm very interested in the response that the Crown's put out, which is basically an apology for leaving Ngāti Maru virtually landless when Raupatu happened 150 years ago. What is the significance of this? Is it a significant treaty settlement, in your opinion?
I think every treaty settlement is significant to every iwi that goes through it, right? And that is part of sort of the standard package in treaty settlements, is an apology, and an apology that's quite specific to the circumstances of the iwi, and there being some kind of financial redress and compensation for that. Obviously, it's always sort of quite meagre in the overall picture, but it does allow iwi to have that money to use it how they wish to and try to support their own people. I think this particular settlement's quite interesting because they're the last iwi within the Taranaki region to settle, and now the kind of the next sort of big thing in that region is going to be the settlement around Taranaki Maunga, which involves renaming Mount Taranaki, and the sort of legal personhood type arrangement that we've seen for like Te Urawera and the Whanganui River. So that we're going to see that going forward with Taranaki Maunga, and I think that's quite an exciting and interesting point.
Absolutely. Hey, thank you so much for your time this morning, Dr. Lara Greaves. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Good luck with the online teaching, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks, hopefully not in lockdown.
Thank you. Bye.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary
with Dr.